Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to yet another Thursday live on Radio Sai Global Harmony. And as always, today we are in for another segment of Afternoon Satsang, and I am Arvind from Team Radio Sai, being joined by Prem from Team Radio Sai, and we both offer our most humble and loving pranams and sairams to all of you.
Thank you, Arvind, and sairam to all our listeners. Today is the 31st of January, and the time now in our studios is around 12:43. So, as always, as we do every Thursday, we are joining you all for this week's afternoon satsang.
Before the satsang, actually, Prem, I just hope that all our listeners did hear the bhajan that was playing just before. It was so magical, mesmerizing, took me into a trance, so beautiful. Well, dear listeners, I really do hope that you heard it. In case you haven't, it is part of the album called Bhavanjali. If I'm not mistaken, it's part 6, the latest Bhavanjali. It's been sung by Brother Ashwath Narayan. Beautiful, and only Namavali, just singing the name of the Lord with all love and devotion. It is sure to take us into a mood of ecstasy born out of devotion to Swami. Well, after that small, if I can say, appreciation, heartfelt appreciation. Well, Prem, you know, there are some topics which rage on and on forever on the face of the earth. Let me make myself clear. For example, this debate between destiny and free will. How much of our life is predetermined? Is our complete life based on destiny? Or is it totally in our control based on the actions that we do? That is one debate. I mean, you know, it goes on. There have been debates at all levels, from school, college levels, international levels, and in spiritual, there are spiritual discussions based on that, political discussions based on it. How much do we have to just accept it as fate? How much do we change? That is one. I was thinking more about another topic, which also I feel, you know, is a universal debate that has been raging on from times immemorial.
Okay.
You know, this is about the means and the ends. Do the means justify the ends? Do the ends justify the means? In short, if I want to do something noble, is it all right if I adopt any means to achieve that goal? Or is being right and good in the means very important, that irrespective of whether I achieve the goal or not, or whether I go where I'm headed, irrespective of where I'm headed, it's important that I always live by the proper means. I mean, this conflict or this debate between whether the means are more important than the ends, or ends are more important than the means, I think this is a debate that has gone on for long and will continue to go on irrespective of how many times it is debated and spoken about.
Exactly. Putting it in a, you know, rephrasing what the dilemma which you just said about, it's again, you know, is intent alone enough, or is the content also important? Is it enough if the intent alone is good, or the content also should be good?
Exactly.
When you talk about a person's life, you know, when you can put it that way. And of course, you know, it's a discussion which has been, novels have been written about it, and I think so many movies would have been made with this thing. And as you said, I think people are clearly divided, you know, on this topic.
I don't agree with that, Prem, because I'm not clearly divided, you know.
You really can choose a side in this. I mean, to be honest, even I can, but would be interested to know.
No, the thing is, I can pick up a side, but I cannot say that, you know, I'm on that side. I can say maybe I'm 55% on that side, therefore I'm greater on this side, or versus I'm not on that side.
So when it's a question of life and death, and you have to choose a side, then there's one side you choose.
Oh, if you put it that way. Every time when this thing about means versus ends come up, you know, I somehow always like to go along with that the end objective, the goal is so important that it doesn't matter actually in the ultimate analysis. How you achieve the goal is not important as the goal in itself. For example, if Mirabai, the great saint, she wanted to attain Krishna. If there is any devotee who thirsts to attain the Lord, you know, I feel because there's an afternoon satsang, we keep it to matters spiritual. But spiritual matters, you cannot actually make a compartment and say this is spiritual, this is not spiritual.
Swami always says that.
But I'm speaking in light of, say, if I want to attain God.
Okay.
I feel it doesn't matter. Whatever I may do something that's indisciplined. As long as my motive is to achieve God. And I'm fixed on that and I'm honest to that. I feel it doesn't matter. Let me clarify with an example. It is a recorded example in our Indian scriptures. And I shall go a little into detail just for the benefit of some of the listeners who may not be aware.
Okay.
We are aware of the 10 avatars that Lord Vishnu took. Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, of which Rama and Krishna are also part of the avatars. So the story goes that at the gates of Vaikuntha, the abode of Lord Vishnu, there are these two gatekeepers called Jaya and Vijaya.
Right.
Now they do not allow, as any good gatekeeper would do, they do not allow anyone and all and sundry to get into Vaikuntha, to the Lord's abode. And on one occasion, the four great saints called Sanat Kumaras, the greatness of Sanat Kumaras is that they look very young. They look like 5 and 6 year old boys. But they are the greatest sages of the Bharatiya culture. And when they come to visit Lord Vishnu, Jaya and Vijaya do not recognize who they are.
Okay.
Do not realize that they are on a very important task. They have to go in immediately. They in fact stop them and, you know, behave rudely with them, because of which they are cursed. They are cursed that having been in such a grand position as the gatekeepers of the Lord, you have developed ego and therefore you are cursed two lifetimes of birth on the earth.
Even if it's the threshold of heaven, power corrupts.
Yeah. Okay. You know, yeah, that is it. That's a, I think that's a universal problem, which even goes to heaven and hell if it exists, I mean. So they put that, they curse them thus, that you will be deprived of this opportunity of serving at the Lord's door and you will have to go down to earth and live the life of, you know, normal, as humans, as people.
Okay.
When they come to know of that, they come to realize their mistake, they feel very, very bad. And the main reason they feel bad is that they will have to spend so many years away from their dear Lord Vishnu.
True.
And they fall at the feet of the Lord, you know, who is like the Supreme Court, who can override or overrule anything. And they say, Lord, please forgive us. You know, we made this mistake. We stopped your greatest devotees from coming here. So this is a fault. We don't want to be punished thus. Now the Lord says that the mistake has been made. You know, Swami always says, the Lord's grace is like a morphine injection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that it will take away the pain. It will give you the strength to endure the pain because it makes you immune to the pain. It doesn't make you feel the pain, though you're having the pain. So that way the Lord, you know, minimizes. Because for the progress of the soul, it is important that the reaction is faced. So Vishnu tells them that here is a choice that I will give you.
Mm-hmm.
You are cursed to go on earth and spend lifetimes. I will modify that and tell that either you spend 7 lifetimes as my greatest devotees.
Mm-hmm.
You will be models for devotion. You will be ideals for devotion. The whole world will look up to you. The whole world will get inspired by you, by your love for God. And 7 such births you can live. Or else, you can lead 3 lifetimes as the greatest God haters. The whole world will be tormented by your hate for God. And so much so that I will have to personally come down and annihilate you. I will kill you.
Okay.
And end your lives because you will become such a burden on earth. 3 such lives you can live. What do you choose? And guess what? Jaya and Vijaya choose the latter option. They say, we want to lead 3 lives like those demonic, very cruel people. And indeed, it is said that they were the ones who took birth as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, the 2 demons who were killed by Lord Vishnu. And again, they took birth as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, the 2 demons who were killed by Lord Rama. And again, as Shishupala and Dantavakra, both who were again killed by Lord Krishna in different avatars. And then they tell the Lord, Lord, we want to get back to you as soon as possible. We don't care what is our name, we don't care what is our fame on earth, we don't care what we do. Staying away from you for 7 lifetimes feels a lot. 3 lifetimes is fine. So we don't care what it is. We will be demons, we will torment whatever, no problem, as long as we can get back to you. And I feel that is so inspiring, so beautiful. If your end, if your goal is so noble, I feel it doesn't matter what the means are.
I think you're taking a strong stance there. You mean to say that the ends does justify the means?
Yes, if the ends are noble, pure and good, whatever means taken, in the larger picture, the means get justified.
Well, that's interesting, Arun. I mean, first of all, let me put it in the very outset. I really don't subscribe to that idea that means are not as important as the ends. Talking about mythological stories, maybe I can quote another mythological story and counter this story which you have narrated for us.
Okay.
You spoke about Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, and in the same lineage comes King Bali. We had
Actually Hiranyakashipu's son was Prahlada. Prahlada's grandson was Bali.
King Bali. And if you take the life of King Bali, he was also an asura.
A demon,
And we had the discussion during Onam time, you know, in detail about how Bali was kind of accepted by the other avatar of Vishnu,
Vamana.
Vamana. Okay. Mm. In that case, if you see, Bali was actually doing a sacrifice, a yajna, to be the emperor of the world.
Okay.
Okay. So the end, in that case, was something which was very arrogant and which was something which was very, preposterous, really. Okay, there was no noble end to that.
Yeah, he just wanted more power and more influence.
Okay, but all said and done, he was a noble king. Okay, his means were very noble. He would do charity, he would take care of his citizens. Okay, but the end was not very noble there. And even in that episode where Vamana comes and asks for three steps of land, he would measure 3 steps and that much land he would want. Okay, and at that point his Guru Shukracharya says that, you know, he is not an ordinary Brahmin boy. This is Vishnu who has come and he's going to snatch away everything from you. Okay, and so you just detest, don't give him. And there he had this choice of, you know, either going back on his word or sticking to his word, sticking to his principle and lose everything in the process. Okay, there he had the choice of giving up the means to reach the end, but he stuck to his means. He remained honest to his word, and you know what the story happens after that, right?
So yeah, Vamana redeems him.
So I think this is a very clear indication that means are important. Means are very essential.
Okay, Prem, I mean, both stories very interesting, but both are mythological, and you know, when we go to these mythological stories, there are so many sub-stories connected. So we don't know actually how it happens, what is the reason for each. Let's take something more contemporary, you know, let's take during our own Swami's times, you know. I remember one episode, you know, this again, for me, it showed the importance that the ultimate end, the goal is so much more important than the means that it justifies whatever means. What happened was, you know, Swami used to call all the students in for a tri session when he used to be at the Vrindavan Ashram. Yeah, in Bangalore. That was a very special session that only the students would enjoy, because Swami would call the students after the evening darshan session into his own residence.
That. You know, that corner door, the moment aarti is over, all our eyes will be on that door.
When will it open? Tell us that Swami has called us. Because he would not call on a daily basis. It was usually considered that Swami should call daily. But every day would be a, you know, waiting and hearts beating. And surprisingly, that's why, I mean, many of our listeners might not be aware, you know, in the whole first block, as we call it, in Vrindavan, that is the area, sitting area right opposite to the stage. Every morning when the students' lines come in, it starts filling up from the front, that is from Swami's side towards the gent's side.
And all the perimeter of that.
The peripheries get filled up. The perimeter of the block gets filled because you can get a chance to interact with Swami. And the first areas to be filled are the central areas because you're sitting straight to Swami.
Right.
And then the corner areas, that is where the gent side corner. mm-hmm. that would get filled ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
But in the evening, it would be reversed. The first boy who enters the hall would go and sit in the farthermost corner on the gent side.
Lock.
In fact, from there, the pillar would block Swami's view, yeah, and if any devotee had observed this, it would seem very funny. But this was done because lines for Trai session would begin from that end.
That point.
And though you're not able to see Swami during the whole bhajan, in case there's a Trai session, you get a chance to sit right at his lotus feet if you're sitting there.
And take the place of Swami's footstool.
Correct. On many occasions, Swami has used people's calf muscles or people's thighs as the footrest,
really?
While the boy has pressed his feet and done Padaseva. And wonderful days. We'll get lost in that. But coming back to the story, to this experience, for this Trai session, you know, always what would happen is, once you're beyond the door,
mm-hmm.
all the athleticism of the boys would come to fore and they would race against each other to rush in. So it is not an assurance that if you sit right in the first in the corner, you get to sit right in the front. You still have to beat all the others. It's the survival of the fittest, literally. You know, what evolution has taken a million years to show, you could see it within the 3 minutes when the boys would rush from the hall to the Trai session. On one such occasion, there would be many elders and teachers also who would be called in for the session. So, Mr. V.K. Narasimhan, former editor of the great Hindu paper, and also, more importantly, of the Sanatana Sarathi, a great wit, a great personality, fantastic.
Very powerful man.
Very powerful man.
Personality.
In his language also. Okay, so, but at that point in time, he was not so powerful physically. With his walking stick, he was gently ambling his way for the Trai session when the floodgates were opened and the boys rushed in. They rushed and almost, you know, 2-3 of the boys bumped into him. Shri V.K. Narasimhan almost lost his balance and tipped over. Somehow he retained his balance. But none of the boys even noticed that, you know. And they all rushed in, and for any observer, this would have looked like a very, very indecent and bad scene.
Indisciplined act.
Yeah. And on that day, during the Trai session, Swami asked Shri V.K. Narasimhan to give a talk. When he spoke,
mission of Swami. Okay.
You know, that anger that was there within him because of the way the boys had done. He very, in a dignified manner, he said that this is not what is expected of students. This is not how you behave. There's nothing. Basically, he condemned that whole act of running for a Trai session. But when Swami spoke, Swami said, Narasimhan, where else will you get youth in this age running madly and crazily for God? This kind of madness for God is indeed appreciable. So, everything else is justified. I mean, Swami himself justified it. So, when I see this, I feel that's right. So,
actually, before we end that, that's another small thing which happened. It seems he was so embarrassed by the way Swami, it became a rebuttal for him actually.
Yeah.
The next day, Swami very mischievously comes again to the Trai session and looks at him and says, "Aaj kuch advice deta hai boys ko."
Well, friend, then I rest the case, Your Honor. That's what I wanted to say, that when the ends are so, if you're really focused on achieving God, then I feel doesn't matter what the means are.
Yeah, I mean, actually, honestly, you put me in a tough spot because I think all of us as students have, you know, indulged in this indiscipline in the name of getting close to Swami. But, I mean, you cannot deny the fact that when this has happened, Swami has chastised us, right? I mean, you've kind of brought an occasion where Swami stood by us, but there are occasions when Swami has reprimanded us for such things, where Swami has reprimanded boys for their oversight, and Swami said you should be careful and you should be more sensitive. That apart, you know, there's another incident which I'd like to narrate here. Again, bringing the point that, you know, means by itself can actually take you to the end. And that is why means are so important. You know, We had the opportunity to narrate this in Sai Kulwant Hall when we had that Radio Sai special program. You know, on one occasion, there was a program which was being aired on Radio Sai where the listeners could write their queries, and Professor Venkatraman was seated here and he was addressing those questions. So one question which came up was, you know, can an atheist realize God? can an atheist attain self-realization? Of course, there's no question of realizing God
is
an
atheist.
But self-realization is the same thing. So can an atheist attain self-realization? So this was the question. I don't recall what was Venkatraman's argument. But as the discussion was going on, Swami was also listening to the same discussion in Yajan Mandir. Swami was seated there and listening to Radio Sai.
Exactly, you know, dear listeners, one reason why we say that we get this privilege to speak on God's own channel is because for a long time physically, Swami has been an avid listener of Radio Sai. In fact, one of the daily and constant multimedia interaction, not multimedia exactly, audio interaction that Swami would have would be to Radio Sai, the speakers of which were installed in his room at Yajur Mandir.
And on many occasions we got feedback, you know, in the form of boys who were in Swami's presence. They would come and tell Swami commented this and Swami said
this. In fact, on one occasion, Swami told Professor G. Venkatraman and the other guests, you know, that Sinclair has come. You know, Sinclair is a devotee and devotee of Swami, and always surprised because he had not come to India. I think he was still in the United States at that time. So they said, Swami, no. He saw him and said, yes. He spoke and I heard him speak also. You know, it was the beautiful human side that Swami would show and, you know, put all of us in that kind of maya that he doesn't know. But Swami would express, on one occasion he expressed amazement as how, you know, he used to say, these, I don't know how they're doing it. What I spoke 30 years back, they're putting it now. Amazing. These, I mean, he used to get amazed by apparent simple things, what technology could do. And all of us, you know, that human side, we get so lost and we try to explain to him the concept of CD, a DVD, a memory chip. Oh my God. Till Swami makes a revelation saying, yes, I know that. Yes, this had happened. He said this. And you realize whom you are speaking with. That would part the clouds and allow the streak of light to come in. But well, those were the beautiful times.
So yes, Arvind, since you so much enjoy this example, okay. I'm hoping that I can pin you down in this. So that was a discussion, you know, can an atheist attain self-realization?
Mm-hmm.
So the boy who was in Swami's presence when this program was being aired and Swami was listening, you know, he thought this is a good opportunity and he turned to Swami and he asked the same question.
Okay.
Almost like, Swami, what is your opinion? Of course, that's the Supreme Court verdict. You know, the final words.
So Swami expressed an opinion.
Yes. Huh. It was, of course, not an opinion. It was
it is the truth.
It's the truth. So, which I am shielding myself with.
Okay.
So, you know, so he asked Swami. So Swami, can an atheist attain self-realization? Swami said, yes, of course. Of course an atheist can attain self-realization. And Swami said that anybody who is able to give up body attachment can attain self-realization. So, Arvind, if you just, you know, look at this thing, this particular conversation, it's very clearly saying that you don't even have to have that ultimate good in your sight. If you're able to do things which will lead you to give up your, you know, body attachment, you're doing seva, you're doing, you know, other practices by which, you know, selflessness, by which your body attachment is reducing, if the means are perfect, the end will automatically be reached.
Prem, the only question that crops up in my head when you say that is, you know, all of us are selfish to various extents. I mean, none of us is absolutely selfless, because if we are absolutely selfless, then I don't think we'll be debating, I don't think we'll be speaking, because nothing else will exist. There'll be only one. If we are absolute selflessness. But because of this selfishness, all of us do something in order to achieve something. There's some goal in mind because of which we do every act of ours, whether it is speaking, writing, eating, drinking, sleeping, anything. And so, practically I find it difficult, you know, to just have means without an end. It's always you have to have an end. And therefore I feel if you have a noble and glorious end, then fine, the means get justified or whatever. Because if you have no end, I mean, what is the motivation to just do means? They are means to what? Means get meaning only because of an end. And therefore, I feel the end is more important.
But of course, I think the Gita's Karma Khanda and Karma Yoga speaks otherwise. Like where it says, like, you know, the present is what is important. I feel the emphasis on present being important and the action which is at your hand is important. I think that is the means.
That's right, Prem. But That is the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, see, when you're explaining to a child or when you're explaining to somebody, we often, for example, if a 4-year-old or 5-year-old comes and asks you, where did my brother come from? You know the truth about how generations are propagated. But you will not explain that to the child. You will explain, maybe the stock got the babies, or you will make, come up with some explanation and tell the child. Because when the child reaches the stage, it will realize. In the same way, I feel, though the ultimate is to just carry on in the present, doing our action without any desire for the ultimate result, the various stages we are in, we may not be able to follow that. Any action that I do, I always look for, okay, what will I achieve in the end? It might not be purely selfish as what will I get. But even say, for example, if we make an article or if we make a special radio broadcast or anything, there is an objective that, you know, it should touch 100 hearts, 1,000 hearts, make them feel happy. There is some goal. It's only the goal that inspires us to the means, though maybe ultimately means alone matter and they automatically take to the goal.
Yeah, I think that is a difficult one to reply to, especially the one you said about, you know, why so many times mothers have to lie to their children. Because it kind of confuses them. The data which they are asking for may not be right for them at that age. So I think that is indeed a difficult argument to counter. So maybe we'll escape and take a reprieve of a, you know.
Okay, we'll sharpen our swords and be back after this song.
Okay, so we will just take a short break and we will play for you a little song, and we're going to come back right after this and continue this little argument of ours.
Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and welcome back, Prem. You know, Prem, the other day I was just going through some of my diaries, personal diaries, and I came across a very, very beautiful moment for me in my student days. That was when Swami had called one other brother and myself, both of us, for an interview just before a drama that we put up on the Independence Day in 2004, I think. Yes, 2004. So on the 15th of August morning of 2004, Swami granted us an interview, and you know, he wanted to know all about the drama, what was being done. This was one of the first occasions when a big program was being, a big drama was being organized by the students completely by themselves. And Swami had permitted them to put it up in Kulwant Hall, and Swami had agreed to watch it. So Swami, as always, you know, took so much of personal interest, and in course of the discussion, you know, Swami began to speak. You know, the drama was structured around all the great Indian leaders of the freedom struggle, and based on our understanding of whose contribution has been how much, we gave roles, you know, like we, all of us know that Mahatma Gandhi has done a lot. Just yesterday was Martyrs Day, which celebrated the day when Mahatma Gandhi was shot, and what a beautiful life it was. As he fell, the words that came out of his mouth were, "Hey Ram, Hey Ram, Hey Ram." So beautiful it was. Well, so we gave him prime position, and then...
No, actually, interestingly, Arvind, I think just sneak in a little bit of information here. I mean, I'm really surprised to see that, you know, in one of the accounts which is narrated in one Swami's literature, somebody shared with me, shared with all of us last evening, on the day when this happened, when Mahatma Gandhi was assassinated, 1948,
30th January,
that evening, it seems Swami was just leaving out of the old mandir to go to the Chitavati sands.
Swami must have been a 22-year-old.
Yeah, Swami must have been 22, and that was the time when, you know, hardly 10, 15 people used to be in the mandir, and Swami used to spend the whole evening, and in fact, late into the night, they used to sit in the sands of Chitavati. So it seems Swami was just, you know, starting out for a session like that, and shortly after that, Swami again went back to his room. And then Swami was going into his room and coming out and going into... Swami was very restless, it seems. And a little later in the evening, around 5.30 or 6, Swami came out and Swami said, "A great soul has merged in me."
Oh.
Swami said, "A very, very great soul has merged in me." Mm-hmm. And, you know, in those days, there was no instant communication. In fact, the people in the ashram came to know that Mahatma Gandhi was assassinated
the
in
next
that
day.
Muti time, not even the next day, 3 or 4 days later. Because there were no newspapers also in Puttaparthi in 1948.
Correct. Stone's throw from Stone Age.
So I think when you just mentioned Mahatma Gandhi, I just wanted to narrate this because it was new to me. I've never heard this before.
Well, in that light, Prem, you know, Mahatma Gandhi has been considered as the father of the nation for India.
True.
And he has been considered as the most important person who won freedom through the freedom struggle. So we had given him prime position, and then there were the others. There's Bhagat Singh, there's Subhash Chandra Bose, there's Bal Gangadhar Tilak, there's Bipin Chandra Pal, there's Lala Lajpat Rai, so many. You know, all of them had their place in the drama. When Swami began to speak, he began to speak at length about Subhash Chandra Bose. Now, Subhash Chandra Bose was the one who said that, "I want freedom. And I want freedom at any cost. And if I have to adopt means of violence and war, I shall adopt it." And that is where he differed in his ideas from Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi believed in only non-violence. And they differed, and they went their own ways.
Right.
They kept their respect, you know, they respected each other, but they kept their distance. And while Mahatma Gandhi proceeded along his way of non-violence,
Subhash Chandra Bose even goes and meets Adolf Hitler. To take his support to...
To take his support in arms, because he wants to beat... He wants to beat the British, and Germany was at war with Britain, and he was ready to go at any cost because he wanted freedom.
Right.
And you know, nothing much is known about the death of Subhash Chandra Bose. It's all in mystery and nothing is known. But Swami, you know, he almost got tears in his eyes talking about Subhash Chandra Bose. I was sitting there, I was so moved, I was thinking, what is this, Swami? What, how are you so, you know, moved by Subhash Chandra Bose? And Swami said, nobody knows what Subhash Chandra Bose was. Okay, his contribution is irreplaceable. What he has done, what he has achieved, cannot be done by anybody. He's one of the greatest patriots. In fact, you know, after that interview, we went and added few more dialogues to Subhash Chandra Bose and, you know, amped up his role in the drama because the amount of importance that Swami gave to Subhash Chandra Bose. And Swami said, you know, his goal was so lofty, nobody even understood. And Prem, that very evening, that very afternoon, we were going through some of the books on Subhash Chandra Bose. One book where there were letters written by Subhash Chandra Bose to his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And one letter I remember, he says, "Mother, I'm fighting for freedom. And if needed, I shall give up every drop of blood in my body for freedom. Because freedom, I'm talking, is not just freedom from the British. That is just political freedom. The freedom I'm talking about goes beyond politics, beyond the body, beyond the mind, in the realms of spirit, where, you know, he was talking of the Advaita that Adi Shankara propagated, you know, of becoming one with the Lord. And he said, that is true freedom when you don't have any kind of attachment and bondage.
In fact, not many people know that Subhash Chandra Bose, as a teenager, actually ran away to the Himalayas.
To become an ascetic. You know, that is why, Prem, for me, Swami Vivekananda and Subhash Chandra Bose are almost like very synonymous true. Because right. both of them were fiery fighters. One did on the physical plane, other did on the mental plane. But both were very spiritual. Both were so spiritual. And, you know, the way Swami was talking about Subhash Chandra Bose, now I am reliving that because, for me, that showed again, that as long as your ends are noble and glorious, that was Subhash Chandra Bose's end, ultimate freedom. It did not even matter. You know, he could be condemned for having taken Hitler's support. Hitler is taken as the worst kind of enemy for mankind. He's criticized that way. He took on violence. Violence is considered as opposite of peace and opposite of an ahimsa that Swami has put in the five human values. But yet, Swami was speaking highly of Subhash Chandra Bose. So much about Subhash Chandra Bose. And I feel that is because his goal was so lofty that the means just did not matter.
Well, that is true in a sense. But, you know, maybe you could say that end being so important and so sublime is very important. But I don't still think that discounting the means is the means. I don't think that's right. Fine, you know, a person like Subhash Chandra Bose, I think his focus on the goal was so strong, you know, his goal was so noble that maybe he felt that, you know, a little bit of compromises here and there in the means is okay compared to a personality like Mahatma Gandhi who stuck to his principle all through.
Mm.
But I don't think still we can deny the importance of means.
Mm.
I mean, that's again, it comes out from the fact that Swami came out and said, the great soul has merged in me, right?
Yes.
If Mahatma Gandhi's ways were not right, Swami wouldn't have made a statement as profound as that. You know, another thing which just comes to my mind when I say that means are very, very important. We spoke about Mr. Karanja.
The editor of Blitz.
Mm. You know, when we spoke of, when we had the satsang,
they came, they saw, and he conquered.
Mm. In that, one of the first personalities which featured in our discussion was Karanja. Now, if you look at Karanja came as a person, you know, the motto of his visit to Swami was, I want to expose this fake Baba. That was his motto. That was his goal.
Mm.
Okay, but when he came as an honest journalist. Because at that time, there were many people who were writing wrong things about Swami without even knowing or without even finding out what Swami
was. Why that day, Prem? Even today, people
Even today, actually. and in a very, very practical way, that's a very, very wrong practice of journalism.
Hmm.
You know, even now, if you see, you get a story, you are always supposed to verify it from the person who is the important part of that story.
Correct.
Even though you're actually reporting against that person.
Hmm.
You're supposed to get that person's version. But here was a plethora of journalists who were just maligning Swami without even caring to find out what was actually happening in Puttaparthi.
Hmm.
But Karanja was not like that. You know, he was a person who had a communist bent of mind. But he said, as a journalist...
Communist means they're not... Yeah, they're atheists.
Most of the communists are atheists. So here was a person, he said, as a journalist, I have to go myself. I have to try my best to get an audience with this person before I report against him.
Okay.
And so that is why he came here. And because I feel that means were so sincere, I think Swami responded to that. In fact, Swami told him, you're a genuine seeker. And that's why I'm speaking to you.
And
Swami,
back to write
and
to
Swami gave him that, you know, it is said faith is a gift. Swami gifted him faith.
He went back and wrote, God lives in India. In this example, Prem, your stance was that Karanjia had a bad end in mind, you know, that I'll expose Swami and his means were good and therefore the ends also became good in the end.
Right.
But if we see it in a slightly different perspective, it's not that he came with a bad end. His goal was not bad.
Okay.
His goal was not that I will... actually, it was less of... Though, for the sake of the story, that part is stated more vehemently that I am going to expose Swami. That was what he had heard. But his ultimate goal was, I want to know what is the truth. So, I feel his end was actually very noble. He wanted to know the truth. If the truth is that Baba is God, yes. If the truth is Baba is a fake, I will expose. And he felt that the truth is going to be that Baba is a fake. And that is why when the story is narrated, it's always said that he came here to expose Baba. But if he came here, we have seen so many people who come with wrong intentions. Whatever intention you come with, you get that. So he did not come exactly...
So you're saying, though he didn't come to become a devotee, because he came to clarify certain things, itself was a good end.
His ends were good. His ends were noble. His ends were, I want to discover the truth. So therefore, I don't think that is a case of means being good but ends being bad. I think the ends were also good. So
fine. I think, yeah, in a sense, if you remove Swami from the picture, if you see as a person, the dharma of a journalist was to give people the truth. And so I think that was the end which he approached. Very true, actually. I think, you know, from this discussion, what I can finally say is, you know, and in a sense, I was trying to drive this point that there's no question of ends being bad at all. Whatever you are, whatever path you take, the end has to be good. I think there is no compromise, or there's no, ambiguity about that.
Okay. The question is, the ends are good. Okay. That's taken as the ground first thing. The ends have to be good. But what I'm trying to say is, if your ends are good, it doesn't matter, the means get justified.
But, you know, just take the same example of Karanjia, okay? You know, in a sense, his end was good. Okay, he wanted to give the truth. But the good which he thought was not the ultimate good. Because he came with the idea that Swami is not truly divine. Okay? But since his means were also good, Swami made sure that he makes that little detour and comes to the right end. So means are important, isn't it?
Well, Prem, let me now take recourse to another story, because I cannot proceed further and give you a rebuttal based on Karanjia's experience, because, yeah, and so I am taking recourse to another story of another great person, you know.
Okay.
Shri Kamavadhani. He was a great Pandit, a Vedic scholar, and we know that Swami had great love and respect for him.
A centurion. He lived for 100 years.
Yes. And it's almost like there's nothing in the Vedas that he doesn't know. I mean, he can be considered as an avatar of a sage in the modern times. Now, Kamavadhani Garu, he was quite orthodox in his practices.
Right.
And therefore...
A typical Vedic Brahmin.
A Vedic Brahmin who would strictly abide by everything, you know. A person, in your words, who would ensure that all means are right.
Okay.
Okay. So, he won't swerve even a bit from the path. And I'm talking about something maybe in the 1961, 1962, very early 1960s. At that time, Swami with a small group of devotees, which included Shri Kamavadhani.
Okay. I think that must have been quite just after Swami, Kamavadhani got introduced to Swami. Because I think he came to Swami first time during the Dashara Yajnam, right?
Correct.
61, 62.
Correct.
Right.
So then that was the time, and in hostel language parlance, Shri Kamavadhani was in great form, since Swami used to regularly interact with him. And Swami had taken him along also. Actually, this was not Swami taking along devotees. A devotee had in fact taken along the group, because at that time there was no Sai Shruti in Kodaikanal or anything. He just said, Swami, please come visit Kodaikanal. This is
okay, to Kodaikanal, okay.
Kodaikanal. So, on the way to Kodaikanal, this devotee, you know, he had a small bungalow there. So, they had stopped. Now, this devotee, if you see according to the caste system, you know, now, let's not get into the details of the caste system because that's a very misunderstood term and actually it's something very noble and beautiful, but often misunderstood and misrepresented. But anyway, this person happened to be of the business caste, that is the Vaishyas.
Okay.
And Kamavadhani Garu, he's a Brahmin, that is the worshipping caste. So, his means at that time was that he should either cook his own food or eat food cooked by another Brahmin alone. And therefore, he told this person that, you know, I cannot eat any food that is cooked. So, just get me some milk and fruits, that will suffice.
Mm-hmm.
The other person also agreed, understood, because this is a person who has been strictly following. You know, even we have so many practices like that. A person who always sleeps before this time, who always eats by this time. So, when he visits our house or whatever, even if it's a little inconvenience for us, we accommodate him because he's been doing it for so many years. So, this devotee also was happy with that. He said, yes, yes, I shall ensure that milk and fruits come for you during meal times. It went on for a few sessions. One session, Swami noticed that Sri Kamavadhani was not having his lunch.
Mm-hmm.
So, he asked him, where's your lunch? Where's your plate? Why not plate for you? Then, at that time, this devotee, you know, he rushed to the aid of Sri Kamavadhani. He told Swami that, Swami, this person, you know, he's been following these prescribed rituals.
Mm-hmm.
He's been perfect in his means. That he didn't tell, that I'm telling you. So, he said that he will have this way, Swami. So, I have asked for fruits and milk. They'll be arriving.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami told the devotee, you just be quiet. Sit on the side. He turned to Kamavadhani and asked him, why is it that you're not having? He said, Swami, I prefer to have milk and fruits. Said, why have you come here? Swami, this is a chance to accompany God. So, why I should not? You consider me God, but the food that is fit for God is not food fit for you, is it? Swami asked him.
Okay.
And he put him in a fix. Now, Swami said, either you get a plate and have the food that we are having, or else you can go back. Which was such a, you know, kind of a blackmail, you know, it was like threat.
We all know when Swami gets turned.
Yeah. Now, this devotee, he did not know what to do. He had to fetch the plate. So, he went to Kamavadhani Garu. He told him that, you know, let's just see, we'll try to speak to Swami or something. But then, Sri Kamavadhani, the great person he was, you know, he stood for all the essence of Vedic understanding, you know. He just said, you get me a plate, serve me the food. And he had the food, as Swami said. He, in fact, relished the food. And in fact, even told Swami that, Swami, why didn't you create this drama earlier so that I need not have skipped such wonderful food for these sessions also?
Okay.
I mean, that was such a sport that he was. Coming back to the point, there, the goal is, if you have to reach Swami or you want to please Swami, doesn't matter your rituals, your the things that you are stuck with, don't get stuck with any of that. It doesn't matter. The means, this was clearly a case where the means were violated on Swami's instructions for the sake of the ends. So, what do you say, Prem?
That indeed is a very strong example, but I'm glad that you actually quoted Kamavadhani, because I know a very similar incident, but here Swami was taking the sides of the means.
Okay,
this happened, I think this should have happened a little later, after this incident which you quoted, you know. And this is narrated by Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram. Dr. Padmanabhan's daughter. It so happened that Swami was in Bangalore to attend a teacher's convention, you know, Balvika's teachers and few other teachers, something like a workshop which was being held, and Swami was attending that workshop. And the guest of honor was the governor of Karnataka. And Kamavadhani was also accompanying Swami. So, I mean, it was a huge gathering there. Swami was there, V.K. Gokak, the first vice-chancellor of our university, and some other dignitaries, Bhagwantam was there, and all these people were there, Kamavadhani. And the schedule of that day, you know, when Swami was attending this function, was that till lunchtime, they would have these sessions, And then Swami was supposed to go to the governor's house and have lunch there. And that program would go until 3 o'clock or something. And again, the same thing, you know, Kamavadhani was there. Swami thought that Kamavadhani will not eat food in the governor's house. So if he had to have lunch, he will have to wait till the visit to the governor's house is over and maybe go back to Vrindavan, and in Vrindavan at around 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, he will have to have his lunch. And he was a 90-year-old man. Okay, and Swami was concerned about that. And Swami could have told him, you know, have food in the governor's house. But Swami was actually wanted to protect his orthodoxy. And also he had to have a bath before he has his lunch. Okay, so what Swami did, you know, Swami called for the car. Swami called Padmanabhan. And Swami said, let's go to your house and let's let this man feed in your house. Let him have food in your house. And then we'll come back and then go to the governor's house. Okay, so Swami broke away from the gathering which he was supposed to take part in. And Gita Munaram says that, you know, she and her sister are alone there in the house because their mother also is there in the gathering.
Okay.
Okay, suddenly her father, Mr. Kamadhani Garu, and Gokak and Bhagwantam, and all of them land up in their house. And Swami walks in and Swami says, see, this Kamadhani is there, 90-year-old man. He will not have food in any other person's house. So, is there any food? And Swami walks into the kitchen, opens and finds there's only rice and sambar.
Okay.
Okay, the two dishes are made. Because only two girls are there, the mother said, just have a simple lunch today because I'm very busy. And Swami looked at it and so little rice. This will not be enough for him. And Swami asked them, do you know to cook? And I said, no, Swami, we don't know to cook. Do you at least know to make rice? So, she said, yes, Swami, I can make rice. Swami said, okay, make a lot of rice. The sambar is enough. And Swami said, you just make a little curry, I'll tell you how to make it.
Oh, Swami, he was a chef.
Okay, and Swami told them how to make it. And imagine, Swami is going to the living room where all these other dignitaries are sitting. Swami is entertaining them and coming back giving them tips as to how to cook.
Swami was the chef, the host.
And Swami is giving instructions to Kamadhani, okay, you go here, have your bath. Okay. So, these two little girls showed the scholar where the bathroom is. And as he was going in, another interesting thing happens, you know. As he's going in, he says, get my dhoti and my angavastram. You know, the clothes which the Brahmin wears. And these two little girls are wondering, what do we do for the clothes now? So then they come back into the kitchen. And from there, they're signaling to their father, trying to call him. And the father comes. He says, he's asking for his clothes. What do we do about the clothes? Again, listening to this commotion, Swami comes in. Swami says, what's the thing? And they say, Swami, he's asking for his clothes. And Swami says, oh, his clothes are in my car. I'll come in Dr. Padmanabhan's car. Then Swami says, okay, no problem. You go open your mother's bureau. And
cupboard.
Your cupboard. And Swami says, under the red silk sari, there is one silk dhoti, which your mother has kept to be given to some Brahmin.
Okay.
Okay, Swami says, go and get it. And you open and see exactly under the red silk sari, there is this.
You know, Swami, when he gets into a tight fix, just uses a one spark of divinity and it's solved.
Yeah, really, you know. And so, you know, and Swami says that, see, 90-year-old man, and he chants 1008 Gayatris while having bath. So he's going to take a long time to have his bath. So you have enough time to prepare the food. So Swami gives instructions and everything is ready. And then Swami, when he comes back after his bath, you know, Swami again says, see, that you cannot go and serve him because you are young girls. And that's another restriction, that young girls cannot serve him. And Swami says, I can serve him because, you know, he has taken me as God. He knows that I am God, so I can serve him. Imagine that scene, Arvind, and this man is sitting in the puja room. He won't even sit in the dining room. Swami says, no, he can't sit in the dining room. So he's seated in the puja room and he's seated down. The plate is kept for him. And these girls are there in the kitchen. And Swami is going between the kitchen and the puja room and serving this man. I mean, looking at it, you know, sitting in the puja room and being served food by God. I mean, that's something
what a honor,
phenomenal.
What a privilege.
But the thing what I'm trying to say is, see how many orthodoxical practices Swami is trying to protect in this. Swami could have told him, you come with me to the governor's house and have food. If means were not important, why would Swami take all this trouble?
Very, very interesting and convincing point, Prem. You know, the fact that, see, in this case, it's the same person. The same person for whom Swami destroyed his adherence to orthodox procedures. And once that was destroyed, Swami himself is fostering that. I mean, it's very, very significant and it, you know, opens up new vistas, new perspectives.
It's a very different dimension altogether in this discussion.
Yes, maybe we can come to that after another small break. we can play for our listeners that beautiful song which was sung as the first song of this year's convocation drama. It is so wonderful, so magnificent, which says that ultimately what the Lord does is the best. You just keep living your life. I mean, it's a very bad translation. Let's listen to the song and enjoy this beautiful song and then be back for the discussion.
ये समय का पहिया चलता ही जाए, तेरी प्रगति ही पहचान रे। चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान। ऊपर वाला जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान। तू क्या लाया, क्या है तेरा, दौलत आंखों का अंधेरा, मन की तृष्णा दूर न जाए, मन की तृष्णा दूर न जाए, लोभ की गठरी भरती जाए, लोभ की गठरी भरती जाए, खाली हाथ सभी को जाना, खाली हाथ सभी को जाना, तू कितना भी धनवान रे, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान। जीवन बादल की छाया सा, उड़ जाए तो फिर न आए, ये तन कागज महल हो जैसे, बूंद गिरे तो भूल मिट जाए, कठिन अवसर तूने पाया, कठिन तूने पाया, क्यों बनता तू अनजान रे, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान। मेला है जग का, क्यों जीता मगरूरी में, श्रद्धा दीप जला ले मन में, श्रद्धा दीप जला ले मन में, मालिक मिले सबूरी में, मालिक मिले सबूरी में, खुदी में ढूंढे खुदा मिल जाए, खुदी में ढूंढे खुदा मिल जाए, दे चलता जा इंसान रे तो चलता जा इंसान चलता जा इंसान रे तो चलता जा इंसान
Yes, welcome back dear listeners. We were in the middle of a very, very, very significant and important point. Prem, with those two examples of Sri Kamavadhani Garu, you know, it brings into light one very subtle yet very powerful and poignant message. On one hand, Swami is breaking down, if you can say, breaking down the means and the path that one has decided to adhere to. And once he sees that that person is ready, that for the sake of the goal, I am ready to do anything, even let go of my means. Once Swami is convinced that you are ready to let go of your means, even your all your means, whatever it may be, for the sake of the end, once you have reached that state, he comes and then he himself supports and helps to ensure that you never have to break your means. I mean, Swami is giving, in the first case, saying that the ends are so important that to hell with the means, I mean literally.
Literally.
And then coming back and saying, now that you are so focused and well on the goal, now yes, I shall ensure that you won't have to break even one mean, even if it means I have to change the whole world for that sake. What's your take on that, Prem?
I mean, really true. When the focus on the end is absolute, I think it's only then the means get meaning actually. I mean, the best example you can think of is, no, is the example of Krishna and Arjuna, or the Pandavas and the Arjuna and Krishna. You know what actually brought Krishna so close to the Pandavas?
Their adherence to Satya.
Their
and
adherence
dharma.
To Dharma. Their adherence to the what was right. Because at every point Krishna actually emphatically said that whatever happens, I will stand by these people because they are dharmic. And the same Krishna, we all know that, you know, it's history that how many times Krishna himself, you know, broke the rules during the war.
So-called rules.
So-called rules which were laid down. And in fact, even Krishna was telling Arjuna in the battlefield, give up all your idea of dharma and do what I'm telling you to do. So the same dharma which has actually brought you to the Lord is telling you break it to come closer to me. And you know, very interestingly, just a couple of weeks back, the Science Spies message which we sent out had this very message. Swami was telling that the Bhagavad Gita, which is the essence of all understanding and all practical knowledge, starts with the verse Dharma Kshetre Kurukshetre, which means Dharma is all important. Dharma is the most important entity for a living being.
The means. Dharma is the means.
Dharma is the means. And Swami says that very Bhagavad Gita ends in the final chapter is the verse that Sarva Dharman Parityajya.
Sarvadharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Raja. Where Krishna says, just take refuge under my feet and give up all your ideas and concepts.
Give up all dharma. And Swami is saying, see, isn't this a contradiction? And Swami says, this is not a contradiction. And Swami explains, through dharma, transcend dharma.
Wow.
Through the means, give up being bound by the means.
This is very significant, Prem, because it shows that when it boils down, ultimately, it boils down to the fact that you should not be attached to anything or even dharma. If you are attached to dharma also, see in this case of Kamavadhani, that's what it is. It's an attachment. When you're attached to it, I shall break all attachment because you'll be attached to nothing else but God. God, which is your own true self. And so Swami breaks that down. Even he breaks down our attachment to our concept of God.
Very true.
When we hear of so many Shirdi Baba devotees, you know, even today many Shirdi Baba devotees, they're repelled at Swami. They feel, how can it be? So was the stories of Shirdi Baba devotees who came to Swami. But then, that is what Swami did. Broke their attachment to the Shirdi form, because this is the form that you have to now, you know, once they're ready to break it up, after that, he gave them darshan of Shirdi Sai only. He gave them photographs of Shirdi Sai only. So, his objective, it looks, appears for us that Swami breaks down attachment towards anything. And once you are ready to be totally detached from anything, he comes and fosters the same.
Reinstates the thing. And I think that is the problem with all our rituals today, you know.
Mm.
Definitely these are means for the end. But we get so obsessed with the nitty-gritties of the means that we get so lost in them and we lose sight of the ends actually. Now, as it is said, you know, a Brahmin who worships God takes a bath, holy dip. You know, they chant the Sasya Sisha Purusha. That verse where it is said that the...
Yeah, it describes each caste as one particular...
One anga of God. One
part of God.
And it is said that, you know, Brahmins are the face, the Vaishyas are the stomach, and the Kshatriyas are the shoulders.
Correct. You know, it is said that the Brahmins are the intellectuals. This was all based on... the caste system was based on your specialization.
True.
See, we have some people who are sportsmen, some who are intellectuals, some who are good in trade. So, that way it was done. It was said that all those who are good as sportsmen, for example, or fighters, they are Kshatriyas, they are the shoulders of God. So, Brahmins who are all thinkers, intellectuals.
They are the head of God.
Yeah, and it is not by birth. It is by what you are good at. So, if you are a thinker, you become the head of God. If you are a sportsman, you become the shoulder of God. You don't become a Kshatriya because your father is a Kshatriya. You don't become a Brahmin because your father is a Brahmin.
Exactly. And you know, chanting this verse where it says that Shudras are the feet of the Lord, and they take a dip and they come out, the moment they see an outcast, a Shudra, a lowborn, so-called lowborn, and they move away. You are telling that, you know, the Shudras are the feet of the Lord. Are you moving away from the feet of your own Lord? And here you are chanting a verse which says that everybody is God.
Hmm.
And right out of that, you know, that moment when you chant that verse, you are acting exactly oppositely. So we are thinking that the perfection of the means will lead us to the end, and we are getting so lost in the means. So much so that we are losing sight of the end itself.
Well, Prem, now it started off by me supporting ends and you supporting means, and now I'm supporting the means and you're supporting the ends. I think this can be perfectly summarized by what one of my classmates told me, you know. He said, why is there a debate? The goal of human life, that is what is said in Bhagavad Gita, you said it states, the goal is dharma. He says, dharma is the end, dharma is the means. Where is the debate? I said, wow, that's right. I mean, so dharma is the end. Your goal is dharma. Your means are dharma. So why is there a debate about what is more important? That's all, both are dharma. So that is where this important point of attachment comes in. There should be no attachment. I mean, means get importance because of the ends. At the same time, because, you know, a means without an end is meaningless.
True.
At the same time, an end. You cannot attain a noble end without noble means. It is just that in our limited time period or limited understanding, we see something as good or bad. But how do we know what happened? For example, Prem, you know, there is the story that is recorded in Satyam Shivam Sundaram of a person by name Kalpagiri.
Mm-hmm.
He murdered his wife. He killed his children. And then when the police were chasing him,
he runs away to the Himalayas
to become an ascetic. And the police start hounding him even there. He doesn't know what to do. He is restless. He wants peace. He wants some kind of, you know, consolation. His conscience pricks him. Without knowing what to do, he lands up at Puttaparthi. And he is dressed in the ochre robe. And Swami gives him an interview. Swami tells him, throw away this false robe. This is not. He says, Swami, what should I do? He says, so he tells you, go and surrender to the police. He says, Swami, if I surrender to them, they'll hang me. I'll be hung for my crimes. Swami says, I will ensure that not a noose, but a japamala, a rosary bead necklace will fall around your neck and not a noose. I will ensure that you go and surrender. And at that point in time, Kalpagiri goes and surrenders to the police. And in fact, he is jailed, he suffers for a while. After that, he receives presidential pardon. He is let out. When he is let out, as per his promise, Swami gives him an interview and gives him the Japamala and tells, now go on and you will attain what you are seeking. In this case, Kalpagiri's goal was bad. He wanted to escape the police and just run away. His means were bad. He killed his wife. I mean, everything was bad. And yet, his life found fulfillment. The only reason I feel is because he gave up all attachment there. He was ready to do whatever Swami says. That was exactly what Krishna said. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. Just take refuge under me, do as I say. If I tell you to do that way, be ready also. At that time, don't tell me that means are important. And so ultimately it comes down to having no attachments. Having no attachment, and then when we are totally detached, at that time, if we have been following as per protocol or as per our orthodox practices or whatever, Swami will come and Swami will uphold that. Because we are not attached, and He knows that our attachment is only to God. So I think this whole discussion boils down to we having attachment only to God and nothing else.
Very true. And I think all of us as devotees will face that point where, you know, what has actually taken us close to God, you know, that will be challenged by God Himself. And that is where this thing of being detached is so important. Because everything comes out of that. You know, we were talking about how humility, which actually takes you closer to God, can become a hindrance.
Mm. When you get pride in humility,
when you get proud,
a very humble
really,
person.
Yeah, it is said that the most proud statement anybody could say is, "I am very humble."
You get attached to your detachment.
Yeah, you get attached to. Yeah, the
story of.
Yeah, I think you should narrate that story.
Yeah, the story of Ubhaya Bharati. It is said that Ubhaya Bharati, when she was walking, she sees that an ascetic, a renunciant, is sleeping on the floor, but he has kept a mud pot under his head as a pillow. He has given up everything in life. You know, it's actually a fantastic statement to say that all that I have is just this mud pot and nothing else. I have given up everything. But if you see in another light, you've given up everything, but you're not able to give up that mud pot. And Ubhaya Bharati tells and says, see, this person has so much of dehabhiman. I mean, he's got so much of attachment. Even normal people do not hold on to their mud pots like this, as this person is holding on. And the minute he hears this, he gets up, breaks that mud pot. You know, just to show that he is nowhere connected.
He's not attached to the pot.
And then Ubhaya Bharati says that, you know, I thought that he had only attachment. He also has ego, he also has anger. And the minute he says that, Swami narrates the story that person falls and asks Ubhaya Bharati, a woman, to be his master, guru and guide. So the danger, you know, like they say, when you have humility, you get pride that I am so humble. When you have detached, you get so much attachment towards you being detached. It is such a subtle yet powerful way in which we get entangled. And that is why we have to constantly endeavor to keep our focus on Swami.
Very true.
You know, you had said about what brought us. Many times it has happened, Prem, that, you know, people tell this person, he is the one who inspired. It so often happens that you hear about Swami from a person. And you get to know Swami and you are so inspired by Swami and you feel your life has changed. And then you come to know that in some way or the other, this person happens to be a crook or he has done something wrong. And you are shaken. You think, what is this? That has got nothing to do. In the same way, many times, you know, our organization, it has come up in such a wonderful manner, the Satsai organization. It brings you along the path and gets you so much of Swami. And at times, sometimes, you get so involved in the organizational things and sometimes even into what is something like the politics, the fighting here, the infighting there, this group, that should happen, this. Finally, the organization which got you to Swami apparently seems to be pulling you away from Swami. That is Swami's message, that you use everything as a means to get to the ends. Everything, the organization, if not the person, everything. But don't get attached to the means.
I think constantly that, you know, keep checking, is the means actually taking me to the goal?
Correct.
Instead of being lost in the means, follow the means. I think the means are very, very important. As long as we are, I think that's the message. As long as we believe that we are the body, as long as we have not transcended.
As long as we have attachment.
We have body attachment. I think we should concentrate on the means. But at every point, ask ourselves, is the means leading us to the end? Because the means have value only till they take us to the end.
Correct. And every time we get examples of Swami apparently, in quotes, compromising on the means to reach to an end, if we see in every of those episodes, you see the lesson that Swami is trying to give by telling a person not to get attached. Because means are important as long as we have body attachment. Once there's no body attachment, it doesn't matter. That's why, Prem, Krishna is never, you know, condemned as a killer. Krishna is never condemned as a liar. People do it, you know, out of whatever, ignorance. But it is never. Because whatever Krishna spoke is Satya. Whatever he did is Dharma. They define Satya and Dharma. Why is it that anything that a great man does, a man of God does, an avatar does, is always justified and never wrong? The only reason is, one speciality that the avatars and men of God have over men, and that is total detachment. When we are totally detached, whatever we speak will be truth. Whatever we do will be dharma. But till we reach that stage of detachment, we have to stick to means, follow the means. As long as we have body attachment, means are important.
Very true, Arvind. And so one of the best imagery which comes to my mind is that of a satellite launcher, you know.
Mm.
When you want to launch a satellite in orbit, you have something which carries that satellite.
The booster rocket.
The booster rocket, okay. And I don't want to go into the rocket science, I'm not good at that. But you generally, you know, engineer the rocket in such a way that it is able to escape the velocity of the Earth.
Right? It have an velocity which can escape the gravity
escape
of the
velocity.
Earth.
You escape the gravity of the Earth, right? And go to the that part of the atmosphere where this satellite has to be placed.
Mm.
So the rocket is engineered in such a way that it has a main engine which actually gives it this boost to take it across the atmosphere of Earth, right? And after this is reached, after the atmosphere is crossed, this very body which actually took it beyond that atmosphere is dropped.
Correct. Thrown back.
Thrown back. That is the mechanism. Because if it is not dropped, the rocket will again fall back onto the Earth.
It will pull it down.
Or it will not be able to go and set this satellite on orbit.
Mm.
I think that is the very essence of our discrimination, good and bad, our adherence to dharma, our attachment to the means.
The engine and booster being the means.
Being the means. So the same means, the same dharma, the same understanding which we have, which takes us beyond this gravitational pull, has to be dropped at one point of time. So our attachment to good and bad, our distinction of good and bad, has to be dropped at a certain time for us to go beyond and reach that end.
To go beyond, wow, that's it's better that we conclude at this point, because I don't think anything else can be added to such a profound thought that you have brought. Dear listeners, we hope that you enjoyed this satsang as much as we enjoyed it. We would love to know your thoughts too, so that we can share as part of our satsang.
And we can enrich our understanding too.
Exactly, Prem, because that is all we are. We are all fellow pilgrims on the same path. Though we chose different routes, we are all headed to the same destination. And that is the lotus feet of our dear Swami. And that is the place where both Prem and myself from Team Radio Sai offer our most humble pranams and gratitude for giving us this wonderful chance to have this satsang on his own radio channel. With that, we sign off, dear listeners. But before that, we just will play one more song where, you know, Swami...
It's a beautiful song which was written by Swami himself. And Arvind, I think, I don't know whether consciously you've chosen this song, because it's a perfect song for this. And Swami says, Satya Dharma Mu Shanti Prema Lato Nitya Jeevana
Yatra
Saginchu, which means keeping these values, human values, as your
Satya
support.
Dharma, Shanti, Prema.
Take on this journey of life. And Swami says in the second line that to put effort is dharma of a human, of all of us, of a devotee.
And the result.
And the result is in God's hand. It's a beautiful song written by Swami. We're going to leave you with this. Thank you, dear listeners, for being with us. And on the other side of the song, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu with his program Love to Love. Thank you. Happy listening.
शांति प्रेम लगोनी नित्य जीवन यात्रा सागिंचु जीवा सत्य धर्म मो शांति प्रेम लगोनी नित्य जीवन यात्रा सागिंचु यत्न प्रयत्न मानव धर्म ధర్మము శాంతి ప్రేమలతోని నిత్య జీవన యాత్ర సాగించు భక్తి తోడ భగవంతుని తలచుచు నిత్య ధర్మములు నిర్వర్తించిన భక్తి తోడ భగవంతుని తలచుచు నిత్య ధర్మములు నిర్వర్తించిన అతి జనకులకు శాంతి ప్రేమలతోని నిత్య జీవన యాత్ర సాగించు శాంతి ప్రేమలతోని నిత్య జీవన యాత్ర సాగించు మానవ ధైర్యమే మంచి ఎరుముగా ప్రేమాధారలే పంట విత్తులుగా మానవ ధైర్యమే మంచి ఎరుముగా ప్రేమాధారలే పంట విత్తులుగా ఒకే వర్షము భావమే కలుగులు సత్య ధర్మము శాంతి ప్రేమలతోని నిత్య జీవన యాత్ర సాగించు మొదటి పట్టును విడవబోకండి ఆది పట్టులోనే భక్తి పట్టండి ఎన్ని బాధలను పొందిన భగవన్ చింతన మాత్రము విడగండి ఎన్ని బాధలను పొందిన భగవన్ చింతన మాత్రము విడగండి సత్య ధర్మము శాంతి జీవన యాత్ర సాగించు.